Welcome to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Bridget Danner. Happy to have you here. And if it's your first time here, this is an interview show on experts in women's health. And this show is for you if you're a smart woman who wants to feel healthier and enjoy all the things that life has to offer when we feel at our best. So we've got a great episode for you today. Our guest is Noelle Tarr of Coconuts and Kettlebells. Let me tell you a little bit about Noelle. She's a certified personal trainer, a certified nutritional therapy practitioner, and she blogs at her own site as well as co-hosts the podcast, The Paleo Woman Podcast. A little bit about her background. She was in marketing for the running and fitness industries. She eloped and married a Marine, and she began following a paleo lifestyle in 2009, which apparently worked out pretty well because she seemed to have really made it her passion. So welcome, Noelle.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. That was basically my life in a nutshell.
I'm sure there's a few other gems, but I had to mention the eloping and marrying a Marine. That's so adorable. So we met on Low Carb Conversations, which is a podcast with Jimmy Moore and dietitian Cassie. I'll share the link to that. And so after that, I just started checking out your site and your materials and really some great articles. And I feel like just a really great vibe on your site.
Cool. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going for. I feel like there is definitely a need for a little bit of what I'd call realism, but not realism in the sense of what is technically defined as, but more in a sense of just being real and open and honest and having real and honest conversations about health and food and fitness and body image and all the things. So, yeah.
I think that's perfect because I had you on the show. I thought, I want to talk about paleo, but I'm not a strict card-carrying paleo. And I kind of wanted somebody who'd be willing to kind of talk about all aspects of it, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it seems like your game. So I'm happy for that.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Before we get into all that, I'd love to just, you know, I think even though paleo is a very common term now, I think a lot of people are still a little confused or misinformed about what is paleo. So could you just start with a few basics to clarify?
Yeah, so it is super confusing and I will do my best to unconfuse it, but at the same time I can't because there is no one paleo diet. And that may even sound really confusing, but let me further explain. So the idea of the paleo diet was started by a doctor. His name is Loren Cordain. He wrote a book on it. And it kind of started the whole movement. And his interpretation of the paleo diet was that there should be no grains, no beans, no what we'd say no legumes, and no dairy in the diet because those foods were not available during the Paleolithic era. And when you look at the disease rates of the humans living in the Paleolithic era, their health, they were much better. You know, their health, they didn't have chronic disease, they didn't have cancer. And so it's kind of like, okay, the introduction of these modern processed foods is what's causing all of the health problems. And so he kind of started the movement, but of course, as most things do, it's kind of grown. And I think the most beautiful thing about the paleo diet is that there are a lot of different interpretations, and a lot of people like myself kind of preach that whole bio-individuality approach to diet, which means really, if you were to consider what our Paleolithic, or let's just say what our ancestors ate, so even as recent as a couple thousand years ago, what our ancestors ate was very closely related to what was around them. So for some cultures, they were really focused on the fruits and the vegetables because that's what they had access to. And other cultures were very focused on the meats, right, and the fat. And so there's all these different varying macronutrients in terms of like what people ate and even the composition of their diet. And they were all eating a paleo diet, right? So there's all these different kind of now taking off the lens of like, this is the guideline, this is the black and white guideline of no legumes, no grains or dairy, little sugar, you know, this is what it should be. It's kind of like, well, actually it can be a lot of things. And they're really, the main thing that I think is so wonderful about it is really figuring out what works for you and figuring out what, how your body responds best to a certain level of carbohydrate or a certain level of fat, and what foods work best for you. So
That's great. And that's just so refreshing and non-dogmatic. So that's awesome. You know, I want to share, I just interviewed Mira and Jason Calton, who wrote a book about nutrients, and they traveled the world looking at different cultures. And they kind of bring up this point that, yeah, you eat what's around you. And as long as you're getting, you know, all the micronutrients you need and, you know, and there's some balance there, you can have a very different kind of diet. You can have this tropical diet or this Arctic diet or whatever.
Mm. It still sounds like a lot like what Weston Price did in the 1930s. So, yeah, he traveled around and basically observed a bunch of cultures. He was a dentist and looked at ancient cultures, or what they would call as, you know, cultures that hadn't been exposed to the processes of modern culture. So they vary traditionally, and all over the world, no matter what their diet was, that they could definitely see a difference between the cultures that had like been exposed to, let's say, those processes, which would be, you know, refining certain things back in their day. That was kind of when refining was starting to kind of kick off, the large industrial kind of modern processing of food. And so he looked at people's teeth, and like their teeth were just crazy different when they had been exposed to these processes. So,
yeah, same idea.
Yeah, it's crazy. So,
yeah, they were kind of inspired by his traveling, which is kind of cool. And yeah, sometimes I think, you know, I live in Oregon, and sometimes I think, well, what were people eating here, you know, 200 years ago or 500 years ago? And I think that's interesting because it's probably the foods that are from around here and kind of fit for my climate and building my body. So I think that's another way to think about it when you think about, yeah, what would I be eating if I had been right here a long time ago?
Interesting. I love that.
So I wanted to just talk a little bit more about grains and beans and kind of binders and foods to just get a better understanding of that. Because, again, it can be too simplistic, like, well, grains are bad. And if you don't really understand why, it's never healthy to judge, oh, well, eating that's bad or eating that's good. Just, it's better to just kind of understand your food. So what is the deal with grains?
So I actually do not, and I used to, believe me, I do not call foods anymore good or bad. So I don't think that that's a valid statement. Food is just food. And so we cannot give it adjectives of good or bad because, first of all, those are very, you know, based, those adjectives are based on opinion. But a food is not like murdering anybody. It's not going and doing anything wrong. So we can't give it an adjective of bad. It's just a food. So I like to think of it more as food is just food. I say that all the time to my clients. Hey, it's just food. It doesn't make you a good or bad person, whatever you choose to eat. And so keeping that in mind, what we really want to figure out is what is optimal and what is best for our body. And when it comes to grains, a lot of people do tend to do better with or without it. There seems to be a very clear distinction, like, hey, I do really good with grains, or hey, I actually don't do well. And the problem is with more of our modern grain is that it's been really highly processed. And back in the day, they would have to process it through very traditional preparation methods. So grains have things, and so do beans, legumes. They have something called anti-nutrients. And these are basically just, I would think of it as just like a little barbed wire wrapped around the grain to protect it from being eaten and digested by predators. So grains don't have little legs that can run away from predators. They can't do that. So they have these anti-nutrients that protect them and keep them intact when they're being digested so that they can be planted and still be planted again and produce and reproduce, right? So a lot of these anti-nutrients can interact with people, not beneficial way. So when these grains are highly processed and they're not properly prepared, which I will get to that in just a second, they can cause a lot of gut disruption. They can cause some inflammation for people, and specifically one type of grain. Well, not one type of grain. It's a couple different types of grains, but it's a composition of proteins in wheat, barley, and rye is gluten. That one does seem to cause more problems for people, and I think it's just the certain characteristics about gluten make it a little bit worse than others. But, you know, they can cause inflammation and gut disruption. They can just by the fact that they are, it's kind of like a big whack of sugar, depending on what you're eating. So let's say it's just a white bagel or something. You're getting a really large dose of carbohydrate without much nutrients there. So it can be wrong or not optimal for people for a number of reasons. But I personally eat grains. I don't eat them that often because I don't feel well when I do. And I personally have a sensitivity to gluten just based on doing a 30-day sort of challenge, removing it from my diet actually now for a long time, and the fact that when I reintroduce it, I have issues. And I had IBS as a kid, and I've always had some gut issues, and now I don't. So I use that feedback and say, okay, probably going to still avoid them now. But when I do choose to sometimes eat other grains. So what I do is I properly prepare them. Now, when you to do that, basically, you can use a variety of methods. But one simple way to do it is actually just to soak grain in water. And so if I'm going to cook rice, like if I was going to cook rice tonight, I just put it in a bowl of water, typically a little warm water, make sure it's in the sunlight. And then I put a little bit of apple cider vinegar, which helps break down some of those anti-nutrients. And basically what I'm doing is tricking the grain into thinking it's been planted. So it starts to release all those anti-nutrients. Rinse it, and then I cook it. And I find that I do much better in terms of my gut and all that when I have that proper preparation technique with grains. And so, you know, it really all depends on you and your gut status. And if you're struggling with things like SIBO or if you are sensitive to things like FODMAPs, that all kind of plays into, are grains going to be optimal for you or not? So I, you know, the statement grains are bad, I think is invalid. I think the question more is, you know, should you consume grains?
Yeah, it's kind of personal. And I'm kind of with you. I'm pretty low grain, but I feel like I can tolerate some rice. And sometimes I'll have like corn tortillas that are kind of prepared with masa, like the traditional preparation. What else grains do I have? Mostly that. And, you know, every now and then I'll have like gluten-free pasta or bread just because I want to eat something that's a little bit more, you know, traditional for me, or, you know, I want to have a sandwich every now and then, but not that often. Yeah, it's interesting. And like you, I think we can learn from our own bodies, you know, just experimenting, take it out, then put it back in. Is that the kind of thing you do with your clients?
I do. Yeah. And I really do recommend that people do that kind of 30-day challenge with foods that they are considering would maybe be a problem for them. And there's a lot of signs first, you know, like, hey, I have bloating, or I have gas, or I'm struggling with migraines, you know. And so if you have a symptom, it's like, hey, let's see if that gets better by changing your diet. And for so many people, it does. And that's awesome. But it's not always the only answer. Let's put it that way, too. You know, it's a part of creating a body that is healthy and strong and has energy, but there are also other things that play into it as well. So it's not always just the food.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's going to be my new slogan, like, you already eat well and seem to do all the right things. It's still not working. Come see me.
Love that.
Because, yeah, it's not always that simple. I think it's great that people listen to the podcast like mine and yours and get information. But, yeah, things can be, there can be old injuries to the system that need to be discovered for sure. So I wanted to focus on paleo for women's health today. We are a women's health show after all. And I wondered if you can say what some of the conditions that paleo may especially be good for, or perhaps some success stories you've had, or yeah, anything you've observed as you've worked in this paleo forum for a while now.
Yeah. Well, I will say I'm not one of those major like paleo fixes everything, but I can say that paleo will absolutely benefit your body and will optimize your health depending on your starting point, for almost any condition, because with the paleo diet, what we're doing is really focusing on nutrient-dense foods. And that's how I like to think about it, is let's get back to real. Let's get back to the foods that are going to make us feel well, make us feel like we have energy, and just feel like both physical, like, health and mental and emotional health. That's such a huge part of it that I feel like we're kind of missing right now. We just focus so much on the food. But so, in other words, you know, transitioning to eating these nutrient-dense foods and focusing a little bit more on maybe, you know, I feel like a lot of people who go to the paleo diet, they tend to start eating more fat, and they release that fear that they had of fat. And that is incredible for mental health and anxiety and depression, and, you know, getting all those nutrient dense fats in, getting all those fat soluble vitamins. I'm a success story. I was a vegetarian for a very long time, from age 12. And I started developing a lot of body image issues and anxiety and depression. And it just got worse and it got worse. And I tried to fix it by eating less and reducing my fat intake even more and trying to control, again, you know, more and more what I was eating, because that was going to solve all my problems. When in reality, what needed to solve it was the freedom to eat what my body needed and what I felt like eating, and respecting that and nourishing that. And so, you know, being able to introduce healthy fats again was huge. And I did feel just sort of, I was able to deal with some of those body image and disordered eating issues, because now after I started feeding my body nourishing foods. So it didn't solve, you know, going paleo didn't solve all of the mental issues that I had, but it gave me the platform to be able to deal with things further, because a lot of my mental head's craziness just quieted. So, you know, that's, I think, a big thing that can help a lot of women, because, you know, if you're my age, or you're a young adult, or you're an adult, you definitely probably had some fear going on about fat, and maybe you still do. So that's a huge part of it. And I think one of the things that we deal with a lot too on the Paleo Women podcast is hormones. And I know that you deal with that a lot too, but Stephanie in particular, she gets a lot of questions about PCOS because she had that. And we get a lot of questions about just relating to anything, you know, and especially amenorrhea and all of that stuff. So, you know, we really preach nourishing your body. So moving to more of a nutrient dense, and including the carbohydrates, right? So still eating a lot of good carbs, especially depending on what you're dealing with. But just kind of doing that transition from eating processed foods, eating low fat, to focusing more on nutrient density and good fats, and maybe taking some of those processed carbohydrates out, is really beneficial for hormonal balance as well. And just taking care of nourishing your adrenals, which is so important, because I think we have a lot of people who have some dysregulation with their adrenals due to too much stress, both in the workplace and with over-exercising and just with a poor diet. So,
okay, so I want to sum it up a bit. So when you take out the, no, you're doing awesome. This is my thing that I do. So yeah, taking out the processed carbs is reducing the stress on your body, and getting rid of, every time we have a processed food, we're kind of having to use nutrients to process it. So getting more healthy carbs, you know, whole food carbs, and then the nutrient dense foods, which when we get our nutrients, our body systems work better, whether it's hormones or, you know, skin cells or whatever. And then fats, getting over that fear of fats and embracing fats in a paleo type diet is good for your mood, good for your brain. It's also a big hormone builder, we know. And then, you know, we try not to talk too much about claims about conditions, but certainly women's hormones, issues around PCOS, things like blood sugar imbalance and overweight could help regulate things like amenorrhea, not getting your period could help when you start to get more fats and nutrients. So those are all really, really positive things. I love it.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
So tell us a little bit more about the lifestyle and the mind-body, because I'd like to hear, I know you have more to say about that. So beyond the food, what do you think is important for women and how they live their lives?
So for me, it's a lot of things. I struggled personally with, I think a lot of women do all of, they're doing all the right things, right? And you even said that. They're trying to be more strict with their food, and they're trying to do all of the right exercise. And we can get caught up so easily in trying to do all of the things. And we can even relate this back to a paleo diet. Sometimes you just got to let go and go with the flow. So if you're not feeling like doing strength training, or you're not feeling like doing whatever, like your long bike ride or whatever, and if you have a goal, I get it, and you're trying to do a triathlon or something, that's great. But I would much rather see people treat this whole bio-individuality thing that we've talked about with food and apply that as well with movement. And having those staples, having the things that you love to do, but then this, on top of that, giving yourself the freedom to maybe not go running today because you have a little twinge in your shin or your foot or something, like allowing your body to rest and relax and recover, and introducing new and varied movement patterns so that you're building a healthy body and not tearing it down with feeling like you have to do the run or you have to do whatever it is to feel good about yourself or to be progressing your health forward, because that's not really a valid statement. And we can do that with everything else too. So sleep, you know, being conscious of how much sleep you need. If you need more, you may need more some nights, and you may need to let the electronics take a backseat, right? So just recognizing how things in our modern world affect us as humans, and maybe, you know, considering what we as a human race were kind of designed to live and enjoy, and how our ancestors lived, and how different that is from now. You know, I think about that all the time. And so that makes me kind of turn off my Wi-Fi at night and keep my phone out of my bedroom and really try to make sure that I use dark shades and that I'm sleeping really in a dark place and that I'm getting all of the sleep that I need. You know, that's way easier said than done. But I think, you know, using those principles of thinking about how our ancestors lived can be applied almost anywhere. So, yeah, that's kind of how I like to take that bio-individuality approach and apply it across your life.
That's great. Yeah, I'm glad you talked about sleep and electronics. I think those are just such important points that can get ignored. As you know, I feel like I've talked to a number of women who are eating just right, but then they're up late on Facebook, you know, till 12. And it's like, well, yeah, things are going to be a little disrupted. And also, you know, I don't want to say that in a preachy way. Probably most of us are on Facebook. I think there's just workarounds, right? Like, I'll try to get in like a show while I eat lunch sometimes because I need to get a little fixed, but I don't want to do it right before bed. So there are workarounds to, you know, still enjoy modern life, but also reduce your electronics exposure at night and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you're not always going to be perfect. And so I always tell people, like, let go. You're going to fall back into it. And one night you're going to be up late, but it's not a reason to beat yourself up. Like, go with the flow again. And if you don't get enough sleep, just be conscious of it and say, I'm going to try to get sleep, you know, better the next few nights, and just kind of go with the flow. And because I feel like as women, we love to beat ourselves up. We don't love to, but we just fall into this default of like beat ourselves up for doing the thing that we said we weren't going to do. And I think if we just let go of that, we would relieve ourselves of so much self-inflicted stress. And we'd probably be better off for it, and our health would be too. So
yeah, totally. Let's talk a little bit more about exercise. So you encourage, you know, listening to your body. You don't always have to do the workout you were planning to do. But then you also mentioned people do have things like they want to do a triathlon, which I believe you've done, and or they, you know, they're into CrossFit and they really like going, and you know, gosh darn it, they want to go. So how do we find the balance? Because I do think a lot of our motivation in this culture comes from having a goal or being together, which is a valid thing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I've done the CrossFit thing for a while. When I moved, we just didn't go to the CrossFit gym we moved to. And I've done the triathlon thing. And I will say that my life now is much different than it was, because before, my motivation to work out wasn't necessarily, hey, I want to bring my body more nourishment and care. It was more, I want to see if I can get my body to look a certain way, to fit a specific design, to fit a specific social norm so that I could get approval and feel better. And I think that, you know, first of all, check yourself and figure out and ask yourself why you're doing it. Is it for the social aspect, or is it because you don't have a very good body image and you're trying to fix things? And so it's almost coming from a place of self-hatred. So I hate the way my body looks. I don't like this. I don't like that. So I'm going to go fix it. And oh my gosh, I'm so ugly and this looks so horrible. I need to go work out. Or is it, I feel good today. I want to care for myself. I want to make myself better. I want to strengthen my body out of love and out of care. And so that's why I'm going to go work out. And so first, you know, I would obviously encourage absolutely making sure that you're coming from a place of self-love and nourishment and care and not from self-hatred. Because I can tell you that if you're coming from a place of self-hatred, you will do nothing but continue to be unhappy, and you'll probably get unhappier, and you will not improve your health. So that's kind of what happened to me, was I just drove myself to the ground. And if you would have asked me why I was doing it, I probably would have told you, I just love triathlons. That's just my thing. I just love it. And there was something way deeper, way more deeper going on. And so I kind of ran myself into the ground until I got injured. And so for a lot of people like me, they get to a point where they have some sort of injury that basically stops them in their tracks. And I had to really reevaluate and think, what am I doing? I could potentially be changing the structure and the health of my body long term. I could potentially be dealing with this injury for the rest of my life. Just because why? Like, why? Why was I doing that? So, you know, that having that injury was one of the best things that ever happened to me. That was hard to say, but it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. It put me out for a year and a half, but it made me think, just do all the self-evaluation of what's going on and why am I doing this? And I, from that path, I started going to a CrossFit gym when I was broken. And they were in charge of fixing me, basically, and teaching me how to do things like a walking lunge and an air squat, because I couldn't do any of that. So, you know, that kind of was the catalyst for me. And I want to save people from going through that same experience of, you know, having to deal with some major injury to have that revelation. And now my relationship with fitness is completely different. I do things that I want to do. I don't feel guilty for not working out. If I go on vacation, I may choose to just go and do a few workouts for the fun of it. But it used to be like I felt so horrible and so guilty if I didn't. I had to be in the, you know, I had to go find the hotel gym or whatever and make sure that I was getting in a workout. And now it's more, hey, let's just go for a really long walk and let's go explore. Let's go for a quick run or something like that. And for me, it's so much more nourishing and I'm stronger. So, you know, I go and I lift, and I'm able to lift way more than I ever could have. I'm working out a lot less. So I'm not, you know, pushing myself. I'm not dreading my workouts. I work out when I want to and I'm excited. And typically that's, you know, 4 to 5 days a week now, because I allow myself to do the things that I want to do and I don't force myself to do the things that I think I should be doing. So, you know, I just want people to be happy. And as long as you're doing it in a balanced way, so as if you like running, that's fine. You know, keep running. I run sometimes too, but I typically try to get people into lifting of some sort, you know, strength training. And I don't know if you're on Periscope, but I've started doing these at home Periscope on live broadcasts on Periscope, just doing these home workouts. And they're basic, but they use just functional movements. And I think that's so important, just to kind of retrain your motor patterns and learn how to do things like squats and lunges and stuff like that. And maybe adding weight later, yes. But I have such a passion now for functional movement and weight training and walking. I just love, love, love walking. And it's so accessible to everybody that I try to get everybody to do it. So so that's kind of where I am now.
I love it. Yeah. And you said so many valuable things there. I'd love to kind of reflect and share some of my own story. You know, I think that we get an identity as an athlete, and we that can be kind of tied up in the story too, right? Like, well, I'm a runner. What if I don't run? Or all my friends are doing triathlons. Like, what if? So I think that that can be part of the struggle. Like, can I identify who am I if I'm not an athlete first, you know? And so I thought that was one thing that came to mind. And then you talked about just the joy of it, you know, finding movement that you love and feels good. And yeah, sometimes following a regime, well, I've got to get my 10-mile run in because it's the weekend. To stop to like reflect, like, do you really want it? Do you really want to do it? Or do you want to stay home and stay in bed with your partner, which is maybe like a way better choice in this particular morning? It can take the joy out. And sometimes I think that slips out, right? You don't even realize. And you do get, you know, sometimes a high from running or whatever, but you can also get injuries and you can also, you know, get worn out and miss out on things. And I love that you're just kind of getting into the deep reasons. Like, you know, you said at the time, I thought, oh, I just love triathlons. But then you realized later there was more to it that you got into. And I think, yeah, as women, sometimes how we learned to exercise when we were young, you know, for instance, for me, I was a big like track and cross country runner in high school. And definitely like there was like a regime and weight training and all this stuff. And every time I try to run again, it just doesn't feel right for my body. And I keep having to like learn that again. And I think even though it's such an old identity, it's just something still there for me. But maybe for me, you know, sprinting or just doing some really, you know, maybe there's a way to incorporate it. But like you said, I love walking my dog. I think it's really meditative and good for me. I love yoga and never regret going to a yoga class. And I try to do strength training when I can at the gym or on a little video. But yeah, definitely like I don't beat myself up if I don't do a hard workout. I try to move my body because it's healthy. It's better than sitting in front of a computer, you know, 14 hours a day. But I definitely don't, you know, whip myself. And maybe one other point I want to make is, you know, I think it takes a lot less exercise than people think and a lot less perfection with the diet to have a really healthy, beautiful body.
Totally. I love that you just said that. I am like on sort of like a, I don't know what I'd call it, maybe a charge of just a kind of like realistic expectations when we talk about fitness. So when we even talk, the studies are showing that just getting yourself out of the low fitness category will do way more for your health than getting from the overweight category back down into the regular, what you'd call, you know, like non-obese or non-overweight category. And that simply means walking 30 minutes, you know, 4 to 5 times a week. Just doing very basic things is enough to get you out of that low fitness into the medium fitness category. And you can get so many benefits. And I will say that I am now I'm all, you know, I'm all about the minimum effective dose, which just basically means what's the minimum that I need to do to get the maximum benefit. I think that, you know, we have this kind of curve. And I think a lot of people are doing way more on the top end of that curve where I think the curve starts to decrease in terms of the effects and the benefits. So we actually do too much. And we're, you know, if you think about it, you only have a certain number of days and you only have a certain number of steps that you're going to take. And that's not a bad thing. But when you work out and you're, let's say, instead of going for a long walk, you go for a really long run and you come back and your knees are aching and you kind of tore down your shin and it's a reoccurring nagging injury. By the time, you know, 10 years down the road, that's, you're not going to be able to do a lot of the same things that you want to do had you have just done some simple, like, you know, a good pace of walking or maybe just a couple short sprints. And so I think that there's so much benefit in just doing the minimum effective dose, getting yourself into that, you know, benefit, what I, you know, the level of benefit that most people that's going to improve your health and your body composition and all the things, but not being careful not to tip over the edge and do too much so that you're actually tearing down your body and making it so that you're not going to be healthy later on.
Yeah, both with athletics and with, like you said, with mindset. Like if you're so obsessed, like, oh, I ate something that I shouldn't have eaten, it was processed, and it's so fatiguing, right? But if you can kind of let go of some of that, it's a lot more freeing. You know, I'm a pretty naturally like petite person, but like I said, I basically walk my dog, do a little yoga, eat tons of fat. And when people see me, they're often like, oh, you must work out all the time and eat salad. And I'm like, nope, not at all. Like, you know, everybody has a different body shape. I just happen to be a petite person. But yeah, we kind of joke. My husband's the same way. It's like, you know, people kind of will comment to us, oh, you guys must be like super fit. And we're like, not really. But yet we look it. I mean, it's funny. There really is a sweet spot where you're just conscious and, you know, you have goals about eating right and moving your body. And it's really, you're really pretty good right there on a lot of levels.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think that's adorable.
Yeah, we just look it on the outside. But yeah, I think it's a good lesson. So I feel like we've mentioned a few of your resources and connections. So I kind of want to share a little more. So your co-host on the Paleo Woman podcast is Stephanie Ruper. She's the author of, what's it called, Sexy by Nature? Yeah. Tell us more about your podcast and some of your other resources.
Yeah, so Steph and I have a podcast together, and we basically just rant about all of the things paleo, and we do talk paleo, but you know what? We mostly just talk health for women and eating and fitness and a lot about body image and a lot about just, you know, how to love your body and how to feel sexy. I mean, that's sort of a lot of the questions that we get. And so it's just a platform to us to be able to rant a little bit and discuss and again, have real talk. And so we absolutely love doing that. And then my website is coconutskettlebells.com. I do a lot of talking there and just trying to kind of dispel myths and talk about, I'm going to be talking a little bit more about fitness. I've been getting a lot of questions about that in the future. I have some posts about body image. I, for some reason, have made it my standard operating procedure to be super vulnerable. So I, you know, I have blog posts of my midsection, you know, all out there. I don't have a six pack, and I have a, you know, blog post about that. And I have blog posts about all the mistakes that I've made in fitness. And so, you know, I just love kind of being a little bit more open about things, because I know that when I was going through things, there wasn't a lot of resources and there wasn't a lot of help, and I felt alone, and I don't want anybody else to feel like that. So I do a lot of just straight talk. So, yeah, that you can just, and pretty much anything I do, you can find it at coconutskettlebells.com. I do all of the social media, so I'm pretty much everywhere all day. But yeah, that's what I got.
Okay, right on. Yeah, I think I saw something flash about why you don't want six pack abs, and then I saw something flash up about either a picture of your own thighs and other real women's thighs, and I was like, right on, this girl's gonna be on my podcast. This is awesome. And I do like that you ladies are talking about the intersection of health and body image, because sometimes those things are separated. Like, oh, well, if we want to talk about having a healthy body image, we can't talk about food because that's getting back in our heads. Whereas like the reality is we are thinking about food and our body image. And it depends where you are in the journey. You know, some women may really be needing a therapist for some eating disorder. But there, you know, people may be a little bit more like you and I, like most women are, you know, have experienced some version of body image issues or disordered eating in the past. And, you know, we're making our peace with it or made our peace with it. And we need to figure out what to eat. So I like that you guys do that.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, I love that you said that too, because it's complicated trying to navigate how to like repair and restore body image and deal with some of those things. But at the same time, recognize that maybe there are, you know, there's foods that are going to be better for you than not. And kind of having a balance of eating intuitively and allowing yourself to, you know, unrestricting things. But at the same time, recognizing like, hey, I may have a sensitivity to this food and it may not be serving me well. So, yeah. It's complicated, but we try to uncomplicate it, which I don't know if we do. Hopefully we do, but
yeah, you guys are using humor, which is always a cure for everything, which I like. Great. Well, I will share all your links on our blog about and our show notes. Any last words, Noelle, before we say goodbye?
That's it. I thank you so much for having me on. It was fun to catch up and just, you know, talk women and talk health. I love it.
Totally. Let's do it again sometime.
Yes.
All right. Take care. Hey, hope you enjoyed that one with Noelle Tarr. I love how just honest she is. She gets into the real issues of women's health. She doesn't get caught up on the details, and I think that's so important. Definitely want to stay in touch with her, and you can find out more about her on our blog. We always have the show notes there. It's bridgetdanner.com. So we'll have her resources there, including her own podcast if you want to check that out. We always appreciate you interacting with us. So if you like the show and you want to give us some ratings and reviews on iTunes, we super appreciate that. It helps the show get found. We appreciate you forwarding it to friends, telling others. It's awesome. Thanks for being a part of this community, and we will always take your ideas for the show at bridgetdanner.com. You can also sign up there for our newsletter, which is an easy way to keep abreast of all the latest shows and other resources we've got for you. Until next week, thanks everybody.